So, this is a change of pace. I think everybody suffered last time. This, I hope, will be light and easy, and will take less than an hour. Okay, so, so far we've been working in CM, now we work in solid life spaces. Let's just remember the definitions of this problems. So, LMP of RM consists of all functions that are locally LP on RM, and whose nth order distribution derivatives belong to LP. Okay. So for example, polynomials of degree less than n belong to the space because their nth order distribution derivatives are zero. Okay. Here's the LMP semi-norm. I'm going to be lazy and call it a norm just to say fewer syllables, but of course it's only a semi-norm. Zero. Okay. WMP consists of all functions in LP which, together with their distribution derivatives up to and including order p, order n, belong to LP. And here's the WMP. Okay, so there's the homogeneous and the homogeneous flavor. Let's recall the Sobolev theorem. If p is bigger than n, then LMP is contained in local CM minus 1, and WMP is contained in CM minus 1. So that we can talk about the n minus first degree Taylor polynomials of such functions, and so we'll be Taylor expanding them to order n minus 1, but not f. So tragically, we missed the definition of the symbol of space. Notice that if p is greater than or equal to 1 and greater than n over n, then at least our Sobolev spaces are C0 or locally C0. So the function values at individual points are well defined, so that interpolation and extension properties will make sense. We're only going to look at the case p greater than n because we only know how to do the case p greater than n. Strictly speaking, functions in the Sobolev spaces we're talking about are only defined up to a set of measure 0, but as students learn, as long as p is greater than n over m, the Sobolev theorem tells us that we can redefine f as Sobolev functions on a set of measure 0 to make them continuous, and I'm always going to assume that that can be done. Okay? So we're working with Sobolev spaces. Alright, so for the notation, I'm going to let x denote either LMP of Rn or WMP of Rn, and I'm going to write double bars of sub x to denote the corresponding norm or semi-norm. Okay? Given any set E in Rn, x of E is going to denote the restriction to E of functions in x, and the norm or the semi-norm is as on the slide, and of course it's simply the inf of all possible extensions, and there are some extensions because little f. This definition of the f is supposed to belong to x of e, so by definition there is an extension. So again, this makes sense if p is bigger than n over m, but if p is less than or equal to n over m, it wouldn't even make sense because f in x needn't be continuous, and then for example, if e is a single point, you would better not try to restrict f to a single point if it isn't continuous. Okay. We're going to be paying a lot of attention to finitely. And if E is finite, X of E, of course, consists of all functions on E, because you can always extend a function from a finite set to a nice set of function. But we still want to understand the norm or the semi-norm. Okay? All right. I'm going to write X of E star to denote the space of linear functionals on X of E. And I'm only going to use that when E is finite. Okay. So, again, in this talk, I'm always going to assume that P is greater than N. Questions make sense for p greater than n over n. Okay, so what are Whitney's problems in the setting of Sobolev spaces? Well, we want to decide whether a given f defined on a set E belongs to x of e. Of course, that's only a question when E is infinite. Given an f in x of e, we want to compute the order of magnitude of its norm or its semi-norm, and that's a serious question even if E is finite. We want to know whether there exists a bounded linear map from X and B to X that functions as an extension operator. So an operator such that TF is always F on E, and boundable here, so does such a thing exist? Suppose that E is finite, okay? Then given a function little f on E, compute a function capital F in X that agrees with little f and has norm or semi-norm in X as small as possible up to factor C. Okay, so there was some previous work. I want to give credit where credit is due. Great credit goes to Pavel, who understood Whitney's problems for L1P when P is greater than N, and to REA, who understood the case of L2P of the plane and introduced the key idea of keystone cubes, which we'll be talking about a lot in the next lecture, maybe not in this one. And to Kevin and to Pavel, who understood LMP of the line. Okay, now, today's lecture is going to state the results of joint work with REA and Kevin, and the next lecture will sketch the proofs of some of the results stated today, and I will be interested to see which lecture is more painful, the previous one or the next one. Okay. Constants denoted by the letter C depend only on which function space we're working in, and therefore depend only on little m, and p. Okay, so I'm going to state the theorems in several different versions. Here's the simplest version of the results. So first of all, we always assume that p is greater than n. Okay. So first theorem is that given any arbitrary set E in Rn, there is a linear extension operator. So there is a linear map from T, from X of E to X, such that for all X, first of all, TF agrees with F on E, and secondly, the norm of TF in X is less than or equal to a constant times the norm of F in X of E. So there is a linear extension operator. Second theorem is the computation of the norm. And here we're assuming that E containing Rn is finite. And as usual, capital N is the number of points in E. Okay, so then there exist linear functionals C1 through CL taking X and E to the reals, such that, first of all, there are too many of them. The number of these linear functions is only big O of the number of points of the set E. And secondly, if you want to compute the norm of F in the space X of E, if you want to compute that norm or semi-norm, it is comparable to the pth root of the sums of the pth powers of those functionals applied to F, as on the slide. Okay, so in principle, it is possible to calculate the order of magnitude of the norm of any f in X of E when it is any finite set. Now, the finite set E, I'm sorry, for finite E, the linear map in theorem 1 and the functionals in theorem 2 have an additional structure that will help us to compute things efficiently. Okay, and so in order to motivate that, I'd like to introduce the notion of assisted bounded depth, or ABD. Many grad students know the initials ABD as meaning something else. But here it's assisted bounded depth. Okay, so let me motivate the idea by just trying to calculate the standard deviation of a sample of real numbers. So given n real numbers, x1 through xn, let's compute their variance, sigma squared. Here are two standard formulas. The first one, I hope I got the factor of 2 right, is sigma squared is 1 over 2n squared times the sum of the squares of the differences of the xi to xj. Okay, conceivably, that's exactly right. The second formula in the box is another standard formula for the standard deviation. It's 1 over n times the sum of the squares of the differences between the xi and the mean. These formulas are both hopefully correct, but one of them is much better than the other. Look at the first one. Imagine that you wanted to implement it on a computer. You would have to sum n squared numbers. Well, you could make little shortcuts because if I equals j, you know, you get 0, and if I equals ij, you gives the same number as Jenny Ryan, but essentially they're n squared numbers. Whereas the second formula requires only about n operations. In particular, it takes about n operations to compute x bar, and once you've computed x bar, you then go back to your formula for sigma squared, and it takes about n operations. So the second formula is much, much better than the first. Okay? All right, the moral is that it pays to pre-compute, and we are going to pre-compute. Okay, so let's see what it is that we're going to pre-compute for Whitney's problems in solo spaces. So let's suppose that E is a finite set with capital M elements. Let's look at a linear functional that I'll call omega. So omega is simply a linear map from X of E, functions on E, to the reals. Now, of course, we can think of X of E as a great big Rn, where the values of the function are the components of the vector in the great big Rn. And so the formula in the box here is simply says that any linear functional on Rn is the dot product with some fixed vector. So there are some coefficients, mu of x, depending on the points x and e, they don't depend on the function f. And to evaluate omega of f, you simply take the linear combination in the box. You multiply f of x by mu of x and sum. So that's simply what linear functionals look like. Now, let me define the depth of omega, written dp of omega, to be simply the number of non-zero coefficients. So of course, if most of the omega, if most of those coefficients are zero, you can make a real short formula for omega. Okay. So given a function f in x of e, it takes only about the depth of omega computer operations to compute omega of f. Suppose that we have a finite set of linear functions on x of e. We're going to call that a set of assists for x of e if the sum of all the depths of all of those linear functions is at most a constant times the total number of points in the set. And the point is that if you have a set of assists and I give you a function f, the work required to evaluate all of the linear functionals of capital omega on f is comparable simply to the work required merely to read the data f. Okay? And so that's good. We're not going to be able to do much unless we read the data. And so a set of assists will be a very, very cheap pre-computation to do that will hopefully make life easier later. Okay? So the assists will play the role of the mean x bar in the computation of the variance that I just talked about. Those are the things that we're So now let me give the definition of assisted bounded depth. So suppose we have a finite set E in Rn, as usual, it contains capital N points. We have omega, a set of assists, so it's a set of linear functionals that can be computed all of them, such that it's cheap to compute all of them. And suppose we have an additional linear functional xi. I want to tell you what it means for that xi to be of omega assisted bounded depth. It's an omega-assisted bounded depth if it can be written as follows. So here's the first red box there gives the formula for xi. So xi of f is, well, the first term is the sum over x and e of some coefficients mu of x times f of x. And if that were all we had, that would just be the generic formula for any linear function. But now we're also allowed to use the assists. And so for each assist omega, little omega in the set capital omega, we evaluate omega at f, and we multiply it by some coefficient lambda of omega. Okay, and so here let's look at the second red box. The mu of x as x varies over e, and the lambda of omega as omega varies over capital omega. Those are supposed to be independent of f, and furthermore, at most, a constant number of the coefficients are allowed to be non-zero. So, for example, if we had something like xi minus x bar in the definition of the variance, in the formula for the variance, the xi would play the role of a mu of x times f of x, but minus x bar would play the role of a lambda omega times omega of f. Omega of f would be the x bar, and we'll say lambda omega would be minus 1. Okay? All right, so that's omega assisted bounded depth. Notice that once we're given our finite set and our set of assists and our linear functional, if I then give you a function f, once we have pre-computed the assists, omega of f, we can then calculate xi of f using only a constant number of computer operations. Okay, so those are functionals of bounded depth. Next, let's talk about operators of bounded depth. Okay, so we've got our usual e, our usual omega, we've got it's a set of assists. Suppose we have a linear map from x and e to x. It has omega-assisted bounded depth if it can be expressed as follows. For any x, there is a formula in the form of the first red box. We've got some coefficients, as before, mu. We've got some coefficients, lambda, that multiply omegas evaluated at f. But, of course, we are looking now at tf of x, and so our coefficients, mu and lambda, depend on x. These coefficients, mu and lambda, are supposed to be independent of f, of course. And for fixed x in Rn, at most c of those coefficients are non-zero. Of course, as x varies, we will encounter a whole lot of issues around this. But for fixed x, only a bounded number of them are non-zero. And so, if we are given a finite set, a set of assists, and a linear map of omega-assisted bounded depth, and a function f in x of e, then once we have pre-computed all the omega f, which remember is a very cheap thing to do, we can then calculate t of f for any given query point x. So I ask you, okay, what's tf at x? And by using at most c computer operations, the computer can tell me the value of tf of x, provided, however, that some friendly oracle tells us what these coefficients mu and lambda are. Okay? So that's what it means for an operator to be of omega-assisted bounded depth. By the way, notice that we could look at the case in which there are no assists. Let's say omega is the empty set. And in that case, omega-assisted bounded depth means the same thing as what we called before bounded depth. So this is a generalization. Okay. So now let me state today's main results in a more precise form. Okay. So suppose we have a finite set E, then there exists a set of assists, omega, and there is a linear map of omega-assisted bounded depth such that for all f in x of E, tf agrees with f on E, so t is an extension operator, and furthermore we have the inequality shown on the slide for the norms, which says that t is bounded. In fact, the norm of t is bounded uniformly over all problems. This is only over a little bit. Okay, so that raises the hope that one can compute something. Similarly, for the computation of the norm, let E be a finite set with capital N elements. Then I can find a set omega of linear functionals and a list of linear functionals C1 to CL with the following properties. Omega is a set of assists, so you can evaluate all, you can calculate them pretty fast. Each CL has omega-assisted bounded depth. The number of them grows only linearly with the number of points of the set. And moreover, for any function f in x of e, if you want to compute its norm in x of e, then you can simply evaluate the functions c sub l of f and raise them to the pth power of sum and take the pth root as on the slide. Okay. Question: can we replace assisted bounded depth by bounded depth? Can we do without the assists in these theorems? Answer: well, for the linear extension operator, the answer is no. We have a counterexample. Okay. For theorem 4, the situation is more interesting. The answer is maybe we don't know. There is an interesting possible connection to something called sparsification that I would like to discuss now. This is something done by the computer scientists Batts and Steele and Srivastava. So here's what they proved. Suppose I have n linear functionals on Rd. Imagine that d is big, but n is much, much, much bigger. Okay. Then there are coefficients, lambda 1 through lambda n, with the following properties. First of all, these lambda n are non-negative, and most of them are zero. At most, an absolute constant times d of them, let's say at most 100d of them, are non-zero. So they're only about d non-zero coefficients. But furthermore, if you want to sum the squares of all of these linear functionals on any vector, then that differs at most by a factor of 2, by the sum of the lambda n times xi n squared. So these lambda n are mostly zeros, so or and admittedly they're not just 0 or 1 error weights, but we have a sum of the squares of the xi's involving only about d non-zero terms, and that's comparable to the much more complicated sum involving n terms. So that's called sparsification. In particular, let's apply that to calculating the variance of x1 to xn, and we can calculate it to within a factor of 2 using big O of n computer operations rather than big O of n squared, and we don't have to pre-compute anything. In fact, the results of Batson, Spielman, and Srivastava are more precise than they've given here, and also I don't need even the imprecise version stated here for the variance because it just follows. It's almost equivalent to the existence of expander graphs, which predated sparsification. Okay, and I'm grateful to Boaz, Bartok, and Asafnauer for explaining to me that sparsification exists. Okay, so here's a question which is possibly relevant to Whitney's problems in Sobolev's basis. Is there a version of the sparsification theorem of Batson, Spielman, and Srivastava in which instead of summing the squares of a bunch of linear functions, you can sum the Keith powers? No one knows. I gather from Asaf that this follows from the case P equals 2 when P is less than 2. But unfortunately, the case we're looking at is always P greater than 2. Okay, I should mention that Pavel has proven that one doesn't need assists for LNP of Rn when n is 1 or 2. And it's not clear what happens for conjugate. Okay, well, enough sparsification. Let's go back to theorems 3 and 4 of the linear extension operators and computation in the norm. So you can evaluate a set of assists real fast if someone tells you what those assists are. And you can compute TF real fast if someone does you the favor of telling you what these coefficients mu of x, y, and lambda of x omega are in the definition of assisted bounded depth. But so far we've said nothing about that, so remedy that now by stating the next theorems. So, using at most O of n log n computer operations, and using at most O of n storage, we can compute our set of assists, omega, and our set of functionals, xi1 to xiL, as in theorem 4, the one for the computation of the norm. So that remedies the defect. So the story is that if you give me a set E, a finite set E, then in time n log n, I can compute omega and the xi's. And once I have them, if you then give me a function f, I can compute the order of magnitude of its norm. And the time it takes me to do that is simply at most a constant times the time it took me to read the function. So that's as efficient as it could get. Okay. And I recall the assertions of theorem 4. Okay? Now, as a corollary of that, corollary of theorem 5. Here's theorem 5. No? Corollary of theorem 5. Have I stated theorem 5? Corollary of theorem 5. Well, okay, it's what I said. Okay. On to theorem 6, in which we talk about the operator. Okay, so under the assumptions of theorem 3, so we have the usual thing, we have a finite set, we would like to compute a linear extension operator, and the story is is that we can compute the set of assists, and we can compute the linear map efficiently. Well, more precisely, what does that mean? Okay, well, we can compute our set of assists using O of n log n computer operations and O of n storage. Okay, how about, once we've got our assists, how about computing the operator? Well, after one-time work of big O of n log n, using storage at most linearly n, we are then equipped to answer queries. And so a query consists of a point x in Rn, and the response to a query is this formula for T of f, in which we provide all of the mu's and all of the lambdas, except, of course, we don't write a lot of zeros. Okay. And so by the time you believe this, you then know that you can actually compute the linear extension operator. It is not simply that if someone is kind enough to tell you a bunch of formulas, and the work to answer queries at most is C log n, and our operator team, remember, is a linear extension operator about the depth. So that's the end of the statement of theorem 6. All right, now the corollary of that theorem is that if I give you a finite set and a function on that finite set, then by doing O of n log n work using O of n storage, we are then able to answer queries, and the query as usual consists of a point. Response to a query x is, for example, the value of f of x, capital F of x, where capital F is an extension of little f, which belongs to the Sokolov space x and has an enormous small as possible within factor of c. Okay, so we can calculate. Okay, here capital F is determined by little f, it doesn't depend on which queries we may have addressed to it, and the proof of the corollary from the theorem is trivial. We take our linear extension operator and we apply it to the function which has been kindly provided to us, and that's our capital F. So that's the proof of the corollary. Okay, so the above results bring our understanding of Whitney's problems for Sokolov spaces close to what was achieved for CM, provided P is greater than n. But for P less than or equal to n, we don't know. And so, of course, we require that P is greater than n over n, and P should be greater than. In the next lecture, God help us, we will sketch the proofs of some of today's theorems. So, all right, I hope, thank you. I hope that this was as painless as the previous lecture was.
Okay, so are there any questions? Okay, so I think we actually finished 20 minutes early. So,
great.
Thank you. The thing I want to mention is for the banquet tonight. So the banquet's going to be covered from the grant, but alcohol is not allowed to be covered by the grant. So there will be a cash bar, and I think beers and wine are $5 each. The last thing I wanted to mention is that your reimbursement checks will be mailed. The standard is that your reimbursement checks will be mailed to the address indicated on your form, but if you want them direct deposited, there's a separate form you need to fill out with your bank information. If you'd like that to happen, please come and see me. So now we break for lunch, and let's thank Charlie again for amazing.